All right. Well, as Elizabeth Taylor said to her seventh husband, I won't keep you long. I will do my best to sprint through this presentation. So I am just warm by the opportunity to come and present to you today. Actually, we were just remarking about my years at APHA. This is probably my 24th year at APHA, and I love to come every year. And so as you guys probably well know, we're very, very busy with Ebola and all of that that's associated with that. So I wasn't able to come on Sunday like I normally do. I just got in this morning. And I just want to take just a little bit of your time to bring your attention to some of the strides we're making at the federal level around some environmental justice policies, and to particularly talk about some programs, tools, and activities at the Centers for Disease Control and the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, but you can't say that three times really fast, and some of the probably funding opportunities that the local public health agencies could potentially tap into, and it may be of some benefit. So, as was mentioned, I am from the Centers for Disease Control and the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry. In January, it will make my 25th year. I have no personal or financial relationships to disclose as it relates to this presentation, and we'll get started. I don't know how many of you remember back in about 1994 under the Clinton administration where Executive Order 12898 was issued, signed, proclamated, etc. And that executive order called federal actions to address environmental justice in minority populations and low-income populations. I don't know, I'm looking over the audience and looking to see maybe some of the folks that were there are actually in the audience. I wasn't there at the time, but I hear it was a monumental event. And then now, you know, years later, I mean, there was some silence over the years, but back in 2010, the Obama administration decided to give some focus and attention to this, and in September 2010, the Federal Interagency Working Group on Environmental Justice reconvened after more than a decade. And when I say the Federal Interagency Group, it includes all of the federal families, all of the cabinet-level entities were there in December 2010 at a White House forum on environmental justice, and I was at the 2010, not the 1994 one. And then in August 2011, the EJ, Environmental Justice Interagency Work Group, signed a Memorandum of Understanding on Environmental Justice and Executive Order 12898, which said that, yes, we will reconvene, we will bring some reinvigoration around this issue, and we will all come together to talk about how we can address this issue as a federal family. We will all put together what we call strategic plans that will outline what our agencies will do under this rubric. The Obama administration, of course, you know, put this out for all the federal family, and HHS, which is the umbrella for which the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention resides under, was actually at that meeting. The Assistant Secretary for Health, as well as the Secretary for Health at the time, were there, and they actually said, yes, we will provide our strategy as well. We all had a goal of implementing and putting together strategies by 2012, and we were successful. And just presidential proclamation just a few months ago, it's the 20th anniversary of Executive Order 12898 on environmental justice. 1994, Clinton administration, 2014, Obama administration, 20 years of success. HHS, the Centers for Disease Control, and the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, better known as ATSDR, actually work with EPA and HHS and other federal agencies to put together a round of listening sessions all over the U.S., all over the nation. We want to hear from communities about what was going on in your communities as it relates to environmental justice. How can we be of some benefit? How can we be of some support? How can we help you work with legislators and others to really bring some attention to this area? HHS was a part of those listening sessions, and of course, CDC, particularly me, was a part of the group that went around the U.S. over a two-year period, I would say, to hear what the community had to say about this. In 2012, HHS released its Environmental Justice Strategy and Implementation Plan. HHS is committed to really figuring out how to pull in or integrate health into the broader sectors around the nation, whether it's transportation, whether it's environment, whether it's labor. All of the cabinet secretaries, as I said, have signed on to really looking at what we can do about environmental justice. And that strategy outlines steps to protect communities facing greater health and environmental risk. CDC, of course, said, yes, we should be a part of this. We are one of the premier, well, I would say, public health agencies in the world, and I'm not boasting. What we decided to do was to name associate directors for health equity across the agency. I actually serve in two capacities. I wear multiple hats at the CDC. Not only do I serve as director of the Division of Emergency and Rural Health Services, but I also wear associate director for community health and environmental justice in the National Center for Environmental Health. And our focus is place-based, pulling together place-based initiatives that can really focus on how to make things better at the local level as it relates to environmental justice, and we're committed to helping states, locals, tribes, and territories. I want to talk to you a bit about some specific programs that we have at the CDC that we believe are environmental justice related. I mean, they may not just have environmental justice in their names, but just by virtue of the fact of who they are and what they do, you will see that their goal is to decrease disparities, provide some justice in certain areas, and use the tools and programs that we have on board to actually make a difference. We're conducting health impact assessments, and most of you probably have heard about health impact assessments, which is a tool that we believe is really instrumental in helping to engage local officials, state officials, community, county, city officials to really integrate health-based decisions into the decision-making process. You know, how do we infuse health into all of what we're doing? If we're looking at health, if we're looking at transportation, if we're looking at environment, if we're looking at all the related issues, labor, whatever, we all believe that, you know, we're working together, and health is a big part of that. We're reducing elevated blood lead levels in asthma, which are two of the really big desperate health outcomes. We found that mostly minority communities of color are disproportionately affected in these areas, and we really want to hone in on and see what's going on in these areas. We're also participating with our partner agency, the United States Environmental Protection Agency, on revitalizing brownfields and hazardous waste sites. We're building tribal capacity, and we're preventing health impacts related to climate change. So let's talk a little bit about this. Again, as I mentioned, HIAs are there to evaluate potential health effects of a plan, project, or a policy before it's built or implemented. So if you're thinking about, you know, reestablishing or reinvigorating your community in some way or building it in some way, let's think about using HIAs or health impact assessments to really infuse health into the decision-making process. They can be used to promote environmental justice and create equity in communities. And we also have just put out a number of small cooperative agreement in this area to ensure that health is considered in transportation and land use planning decisions. So we have a small grant program. And when we say small, we're talking, you know, $3-4 million at the federal level. But when we give it out to communities at the local level, it goes a long way. So $150,000-$200,000 to a particular city or county, they can really utilize that. And I'm happy to say that right now I think we have maybe 11 to 15 grants that are out there. Lead poisoning prevention. CDC and its partners have driven a significant decline in the number of children with elevated blood lead levels over the past 20 years. Still, there is no safe level of lead that we've been able to identify. We used to talk about 10 micrograms per deciliter as an action level of concern. We've backed up on that a little bit because we found that levels as low as 5 micrograms per deciliter really have an impact as well. So, and we have not been able to identify any safe level. Not to say that there's not one out there, we just haven't been able to identify it yet. And then we also have new cooperative agreements in this area that can close the disparity for minority children in this area. I just wanted to put up here a map, and some of the ones in blue are the funded states. You can see unfunded states. But we were happy that we just got an infusion of dollars in the last year to really put money out to the states, and we're hoping to get an increase in the next year so we can have more blues on this map. Asthma, disease burden, it's really disproportionate. Common disease with significant health disparities associated with health care costs. In 2010, there were 400 asthma-related hospitalizations, over 1.8 million emergency department visits, and 14.2 million asthma-related doctor visits. And about 9 people each day die from asthma. Black Americans or African Americans are 2 to 3 times more likely to die from asthma than any other racial or ethnic group. So as you can see, we really need to focus in this area. We also have been able to fund a number of key states and locals in this area, and you can see they're also noted in blue. Again, I'm happy to announce that we got some increase in funding, and we're hoping to get even more in the next year so we can make more on this map blue. Brownfields and hazardous waste sites. Our sister agency, the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, they actually go out and they do health assessments and health consultation at over 6,000 health brownfields or hazardous waste sites. We also have small cooperative agreement funding to local and state entities to really go out and make a difference in this area, looking at redevelopment, trying to engage the community, trying to promote health, and establish partnerships so we can get at the health issues that are related to these folks in these communities. And most of ATSDIR's site-specific activity is in low-income minority locations. National Tribal and Remote Health Think Tank, we want to include everybody. We've been really working with over 600 tribes and communities trying to facilitate, you know, meetings in this area. We've put together a 3 to 5 year strategic plan in our Office of Tribal Affairs, trying to engage the tribes in this area as well. We're doing a particularly focused study on uranium exposure and effects on the Navajo children as they're developing. And this is a really, really big, broad study. Climate and health. I mean, I know climate is in the news often. You know, we're in New Orleans and it's really cold. And so what do we want to do in this area? We want to think about how do we enhance the capacity at the state and local level to really address the potential health impacts that are associated with climate change. We have been given a small amount of money to actually really give money to states and locals. As you can see, the currently funded states are in green. And we also want to make this, you know, more accessible to many states and many locals in this arena. Where are we going with this? We would like to really make a difference as it relates to environmental justice, really sort of get behind the policies, work with our neighboring federal agencies, work with our state, local, and tribal partners. And we want to seize the opportunities to coordinate regional resources related to environmental justice and develop health equity metrics. How do we really, you know, evaluate and measure whether we're making a difference or not? There are many tools that we've developed, tools to, you know, engage the community, tools to assess which communities are environmental justice related, and we offer those tools. You can always go on the CDC website, look under environmental health, and access some of these tools. And again, we want to continue to build community partnerships. So with that, I will leave it. I don't know if we're leaving questions for the very end or if you want to ask me some questions before the next speaker comes up. And I'm not sure how long I took, but Elena would know.
Actually, you took less than 15 minutes.
Great.
So you're great. Are there any immediate questions? Because I thought that we would actually have a conversation a little later on. But if there are immediate questions you'd like to ask Dr. McKinnon?
Any burning questions? I'm sorry. Cooperative agreements are actually funding opportunities that federal agencies, CDC just being one of them, where we are getting money from Congress and we want to put that money out the door to help states, to help locals, to help, in our cases, health departments. In EPA's case, it may be environmental departments. In HUD's case, it may be housing departments. And what it is you enter into a cooperative agreement. You know, we give you funding. You tell us you're going to do X, Y, and Z. You're going to make a difference in a community. You're going to make a difference in a state. And you're going to make that difference by doing these set of activities. And then we say, well, we want to help you do that. Yes, we'll give you this funding, but how can we help? We believe that you're in the communities. You know what the issues are. You tell us where the issues are, and we want to help you make a difference. So that's what a cooperative agreement is. Sorry about that.
I have a question about the EPA. Can you answer it?
I'll try.
But the EPA is, they're about to amend the Clean Air Act, and they had asked for public
comment
on December 1st.
Mm-hmm. Like clean air or clean coal or clean whatever. I can't speak a whole lot about it because my area is health, but we do collaborate with EPA a whole lot. And what we want to do is, if we're making, you know, different fuels or what have you, or whatever we're burning and we're putting this stuff in the atmosphere, we want to make sure that our air is as pristine as we can. If we're burning, you know, different things, fossil fuels or whatever, we want to, you know, limit the amount of, I would say, pollution, you know, for lack of a better term, that's in the air. Because how I can actually answer this is because it affects our health. You know, there is a preponderance of respiratory illness and issues out in our communities. I just talked about asthma. We have, you know, not only children but adults that are affected by asthma, and that asthma can be exacerbated by what's in the air. So we want to support their activities and actions as it relates to making sure that our air is as clean as possible. So, you're welcome. Any other quick questions? And I'll be happy to answer anything at the very end. So thank you again for allowing me to present.
Thank you so much, Dr. Buchanan.